This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from Military Times, dated May 28, 2025. No clear plan for supporting Guam missile defense system, GAO finds. The Defense Department has yet to develop a clear strategy to guide the construction, deployment, and long-term management of the missile defense architecture it is building on Guam, the Government Accountability Office has determined. The office is concerned that without such a plan, the effort, risk, costs, and schedule overruns, and an infrastructure unready to accommodate the additional personnel required to operate the defensive shield. In a report released May 22nd, the government watchdog notes that while the Pentagon has set up organizations to manage the Guam defense system, and has now designated lead services for sustaining and operating it, there is no strategy to transfer responsibilities from the Missile Defense Agency to the various service leads. As a result, DoD risks scheduled delays for the deployment of the GDS, Guam Defense System elements, and incomplete plans for organization, training, personnel, levels, and facilities, among other things, the report states. The Army, which is leading the effort, to establish a system on the strategic island in the Pacific, also faces hurdles to advocate for construction and installation support from the other military services well established on Guam. And the Defense Department has yet to come up with firm numbers for personnel required to operate and sustain the system and estimates of when they might arrive, according to the report. Without clear personnel requirements or deployment schedules, services will not be able to adequately plan for necessary support systems, which will reduce service personnel readiness and may exacerbate existing infrastructure, the watchdog states. At the end of 2023, the Pentagon pointed to 2024 as critical for establishing the planned missile defense architecture on Guam. As the threat from China continues to grow, DoD pledged to deliver a foundational capability to help stave off a potential attack directed at Guam by the end of 2024. That schedule is already slipping. Guam is an island of nearly 170,000 people that sits in a vulnerable position. It is clear closer to Beijing than it is to Hawaii. The island plays host to a significant amount of U.S. combat power and would therefore be an attractive target for China in the event of a war in the Taiwan Strait. The Missile Defense Agency and the Army sought a combined $1.5 billion in the fiscal 2024 budget to begin preparing the island by moving assets into place and integrating capabilities. The Pentagon designated the Army in 2023 as the lead service overseeing the acquisition and execution plan for defending Guam. Competing for resources. The current plan, according to the report, is to distribute elements of the architecture across 16 sites on the island and establish a Guam command center. The Pentagon is planning for its first deployment to begin in fiscal year 2027, with final elements, GDS elements, coming in fiscal 2032. The architecture is a tall order, considering the Army's previous experience establishing a Terminal High Altitude Air Defense, or THAAD, system on Guam in 2013. The THAAD battery, known as Task Force Talon, was first deployed as expeditionary but became permanently stationed in June 2016 to defend against possible ballistic missile threats from North Korea. Over a decade later, the report points out the Army does not have sufficient installation support for the THAAD battery and has had trouble getting approvals from the Navy for construction to support the system. The Army status on the island leaves it without its own construction planners, forcing it to rely on other services. For example, GAO reports that the THAAD unit did not receive approval to start environmental work until January 2024, construct a temporary maintenance facility for deployment equipment after a typhoon hit the island in May 2023. The unit also has limited storage space for parts and has to leave some parts outside unprotected, resulting in continuous corrosion issues. And austere conditions have resulted in morale challenges, GAO found. The THAAD unit had just installed a latrine with running water and an ice machine in 2023. There is still no drinkable water at the location. The Army is going to require a much larger number of facilities to support the new missile defense architecture and wants to make Guam a duty station of choice, the report states. The Army will continue to have to rely on installation from the other services because it won't be establishing its own base on the island, GAO said. The Army will likely face challenges in advocating for construction priorities and coordinating installation support across multiple locations. At the same time, the Pentagon is looking to move personnel to the island for the missile defense system. The Marine Corps is also relocating 1,700 Marines from Okinawa, Japan to Guam. The plan is to move them all by 2029, the report notes. The agency previously reported Guam's limited housing is a concern as the Marines built up a presence there, and the Air Force and the Navy both have construction priorities for their own bases that could compete for resources needed for the missile defense system's establishment. The Pentagon also struggled to determine which service will be responsible for operating and sustaining which elements of the Guam architecture. GAO indicated there were some internal disputes over the division of responsibilities for various aspects of the system. Determining density. Despite the Deputy Secretary of Defense directing the Army in June 2023 to determine how many personnel would be required for GDS within 120 days, the service did not complete the task and still had not produced a number by August 2024, according to the report. The Army told GAO it was waiting for the Pentagon to decide the lead organizations for operations and sustainment before determining personnel levels, facility needs, and training plans. The Pentagon has also not established a timeline for transferring responsibility, according to the report. DoD has proposed multiple military services to manage GDS, which makes developing a plan for operating and sustaining GDS particularly challenging, the report states. Specifically, DoD officials told us that this missile defense program will be the department's largest and most complicated, presenting communication and planning challenges among the various DoD stakeholders. Without some prediction of personnel that will flow onto the island over what timeline, the Pentagon faces the prospect of deploying personnel to Guam without adequate facilities or installation support services in place, including security of sites, fire protection, and emergency management, as bases operate by three different military services in Guam, according to the report. Some estimates state there will be a need for roughly 913 Army personnel in Guam by fiscal 2028, while another calculates a possible growth of 4,464 personnel by the same year. Overall, the island's population is estimated to grow from 17,917 personnel and dependents to 26,605 by fiscal year 2034. In its report, GAO recommends that the Pentagon develop a strategy with a timeline for transferring responsibilities to lead organizations and services for the various elements of the architecture. The Army should also develop a long-term strategy for its organization as a supported command on the island. And Defense Secretary should determine personnel requirements needed for the architecture to allow sufficient time for completing construction of necessary support facilities on Guam, the report states. In our next article, Hegseth cuts Pentagon's testing office in half and appoints a new leader. Dated May 28, 2025. The Pentagon is slashing the size of its operational test and evaluation organization and appointing a new interim director as part of a broader restructuring, according to a memo from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. In a document released publicly today, Hegseth said the move to restructure the Office of the Director of Operational Test and Evaluation, or ODOTE, supports the Pentagon's America's First Defense Strategy. The memo would reduce the staff to 30 civilians, 15 military personnel, and one senior leader. A comprehensive internal review has identified redundant, non-essential, non-statutory functions within ODOTE that do not support operational agility or resource efficiency, affecting our ability to rapidly and effectively deploy the best systems to the warfighter, Hegseth said. The reduction would amount to more than 50% cut to the office, a defense official told Defense News. Prior to the reorganization order, the office was staffed with 94 personnel, 82 civilians, and 12 military members. The department estimates the changes will save more than $300 million annually. The Pentagon's Test and Evaluation Office oversees the process for validating weapons and platforms across the Defense Department. While the military services have their own test teams, the DoD-level office sets policies, provides oversight for major programs, and serves as an advisor to the Joint Requirements Oversight Council, among other responsibilities. One of the office's more public-facing tasks is publishing an annual testing update on the department's major weapon systems, including the F-35 fighter jet, the Navy's Columbia-class submarine, and the Army's long-range hypersonic weapon. The report also assesses the health and the test and evaluation of Enterprise, including its equipment, ranges, and other testing facilities. The most recent report was released in January. In a statement Wednesday, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, said the cuts to the independent testing organization puts service members and the nation's security at risk. How is it efficient to gut the office responsible for testing our equipment and making sure it's safe for service members to use? Warren said, this dangerous decision should be immediately reversed. The personnel cuts will come through a targeted, deliberate, and expeditious civilian reduction in force, according to the memo. RIF notices will be distributed early next week, and personnel who are not retained will be placed on administrative leave. All leadership currently classified as senior executive service will also be put on leave. ODT&E civilians who are employed by one of the military services will transfer back to those offices. Beyond the workforce reduction, HEXIF calls for ending all contractor personnel support within 7 days of the memo's release. If OT&E decides it needs to support contractor personnel after adjusting to its base statutory mission set, ODT&E may request such contract support with Deputy Secretary of Defense review after an initial 60-day acclimation period, the state document states. The memo also appoints Carol Quaid, currently the Navy's deputy for test and evaluation, to perform the duties of ODOT&E director effective immediately. Quaid replaces Raymond O'Toole, who has served as acting director of the office since January, following two prior tours in the acting role. Mr. Quaid will assume all duties as director, overseeing the transition and ensuring OT&E's statutory requirements remain effective and in compliance with statute, the memo states. In our next article, Navy relieves Admiral in charge of Unmanned Systems Office, dated May 28, 2025. The Navy relieved the Executive Officer for Unmanned and Small Combatants Programs on Tuesday, the service said. Dr. Brett Seidel, Acting Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Research, Development, and Acquisition, dismissed Rear Admiral Kevin Smith as Programs Executive Officer for the Program Executive Office for Unmanned and Small Combatants due to a loss of confidence based on a complaint substantiated by an Office of the Navy Naval Inspector General investigation, according to a release. The Navy maintains the highest standards for leaders and holds them accountable when those standards are not met, the release said. The release did not provide additional details on Smith's dismissal or the nature of the complaint. The term loss of confidence is a common refrain attached to the departure of a senior military leader. On June 1, 2023, Smith was appointed the Program Executive Officer for the Program Executive Office for Unmanned and Small Combatants, an acquisition authority within the Navy Naval Sea Systems Command that helps design, develop, and create unmanned maritime systems, mine warfare systems, special warfare systems, expeditionary warfare systems, and small surface combatants, according to the service. His awards include 3 Legion of Merits, 6 Meritorious Service Medals, 2 Navy Commendation Medals, the Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal. Smith has been temporarily reassigned to the staff of the Naval Sea Systems Command, according to the release. Melissa Kirkendall, Executive Director of the Program Executive Office for Unmanned and Small Combatants, has temporarily assumed Smith's duties. And in our next article, Marines Army deploying missile systems to Luzon Strait, dated May 28, 2025. Marine Corps and Army missile systems are set to deploy to a key choke point in the Philippine island chains for anti-ship drills during the military exercise known as Kamandatag. The unmanned anti-ship Navy Marine Expeditionary Ship Interdiction System, or NEMESIS, and the Army High Mobility Rocket Artillery System will feature prominently in the exercise with their emplacement between Luzon and Taiwan, U.S. Naval Institute reported. The 3rd Marine Littoral Regiment's Nemesis is heading to the Batanes, the northernmost portion of Philippine territory. The platform first reached the island of Basco and Bataan for Balikatan 2025, a maritime security exercise. That was the first time the Marines deployed the anti-ship missile to the Luzon Strait. The insertion of the Nemesis on Bataan during the exercise Balakatan's 25th MKTSO was an achievement of a major milestone, not just for the 3rd MLR, but for the entire U.S. Marine Corps enterprise, signifying advancements in their services equipment fielding to employment timelines, said Colonel John G. Lehane, commanding officer of the 3rd Marine Littoral Regiment. In a matter of months, the Nemesis went from an experimental asset undergoing the rigorous initial operational testing and evaluation spearheaded by Marine Corps Systems Command and the Program Office to a fully fielded weapon system capable of neutralizing the threat of adversarial vessels in contested littoral zones. Marine Rotational Force Darwin will conduct corps-level command and control. The 3rd MLR will deploy their missile battery to Batanes under using KC-130J support aircraft, USNI support reported. Commandag 9 is a clear demonstration of the strength of the U.S.-Philippine alliance and our ironclad commitment to regional security and combined readiness, said Colonel Jason C. Armas, commanding officer of the MRF-D-25.3 MAGTF. Training soldier to shoulder with our Philippine Marine Corps partners isn't just about building interoperability. It's about forging trust in the crucible of shared hardship and preparing together to respond with speed and precision to any crisis, anywhere, anytime. The exercise is scheduled to run from May 26 to June 6 and will take place across the Philippines archipelago, including Luzon, Batanes, Tawi-Tawi, and Palawan, according to a release. Training events include maritime key terrain security operations, defensive counter-landing, live fire drills, littoral maneuver, amphibious operations, and humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, according to a release. Japan and Korean forces are scheduled to conduct amphibious drills in the province of Palawan, which faces the South China Sea, a key area of control for any potential conflict with Beijing. The Army HIMARS will be transported by the Army Armed Forces of the Philippines alongside the Marine Anti-Ship Systems. The service deployed the launchers during Balakatan 2024. The missile units will rehearse maritime strikes in the Luzon Strait. Those systems can cover the 250-kilometer wide strait through fires and sensors, USNI reported. The 3rd MLR used a network of ground-based sensors and drones across Batanes and the Babuyan Islands during previous exercises. Those operations included the Philippine territory of Mavulis, less than 90 miles from Taiwan. In our next article, airmen hold first training sortie for a new electronic attack plane, dated May 27, 2025. Airmen this month conducted the first mission's training sortie for a new EA-337B COMPASS call, a milestone for the adoption of the Air Force's new electronic attack aircraft. The training flight was carried out on May 2nd by the 43rd Electronic Combat Squadron at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Arizona, the service said. This EA-37B mission culminates years of planning and coordination between thousands of people spanning many organizations, Squadron Commander Lieutenant Colonel Trey Wood said. The hard work and dedication of these groups ensure the 55th Electronic Combat Group is prepared for future conflict, with the 43rd Electronic Combat Squadron leading developments in electronic magnetic spectrum. The EA-37B is a heavily adapted Gulfstream G550 business jet designed to conduct electronic warfare operations to support U.S. and allied forces. It is slated to replace the service's aging fleet of EC-130H Compass Call aircraft. The aircraft is loaded with classified equipment that can jam enemy communications, radar, and navigation signals. It can also defuse roadside bombs wirelessly and block enemy air defenses from transmitting information between sensors, control networks, and weapons, which will allow U.S. and partner aircraft to get closer to their targets. The Air Force plans to buy 10 EA-37Bs from BAE Systems and L3 Harris, half of which have so far been delivered. The companies, which are co-prime contractors on the plane, expect to deliver the final five in 2027 and 2028. The first EA-37B was delivered to Davis-Monthan in August 2024 to begin pilot training. The EA-37B and the professionals who support its mission represent the most recent evolution in a long history of electromagnetic spectrum dominance for the 55th Electronic Combat Group, said Lieutenant Colonel Jesse Sueda, the squadron's director of operations. The capabilities of this platform are the cornerstone to addressing emerging threats in any area of responsibility at any time. The electronic attack equipment for the new Compass Calls are built by BAE and then integrated into the G550 jets at L3 Harris's facility in Waco, Texas. The G550's outer mold lines are modified to make room for the equipment at Gulf Springs facility in Savannah, Georgia. The service has so far retired 10 of its 14 EC-130Hs, which were flown frequently during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. The older Compass Calls were modified C-130Hs, some of which date back to the Vietnam War. The new EA-37Bs will fly 40% faster than the older models and have twice the range, and will be able to fly nearly 15,000 feet higher, L3H Harris said in April. By creating the new Compass Calls out of modern commercial derivative aircraft, the prime contractors expect the Air Force will be able to obtain spare parts and sustain it more easily. In our next article, Starlink O-rings to help monitor cellular fatigue underway, dated May 27, 2025. When the USS Gerald R. Ford Superior Strike Group gets underway later this year, 1,600 sailors equipped with O-rings will embark on the largest volunteer study of crew fatigue to date. During the deployment, the rings will monitor the wearer's sleep length and quality, along with the range of other biometric indicators, to provide commanders with a near real-time picture of units' rest levels and allow them to make changes to support performance and address fatigue. The Starlink Internet access now being provided onboard deployed Navy ships will allow the data from the rings to be uploaded securely and anonymously for review by both by unit leaders and researchers in San Diego. It will track trends and hotspots and produce reports on the data. It's a step towards the Navy's ultimate goal to monitor real-time fatigue for all underway sailors and prevent future disasters linked to exhaustion. The origin of the upcoming sleep experiments date back to 2017, when the Navy lost 17 sailors to two separate collisions from the destroyers McCain and Fitzgerald with commercial ships in the Pacific. Investigations would cite crew fatigue as a factor in both tragedies, while some changes were made quickly, such as instituting a watch-standing schedule that more closely aligned with sailors' natural circadian rhythms. Other changes have been slow to materialize. A 2021 Government Accountability Office report recommended that the Navy require systematic collection of quality and timely fatigue data from sailors and use the data to better understand factors contributing to fatigue and how to address them. But as of 2023, the GAO found the Navy still had not fully implemented its plan to use wearables to collect biometric sleep and health data from sailors in real time, called the Command Readiness Endurance and Watch Standing, or CREW, program. This line of effort was developed by the Naval Health Research Center and equipped its first sailors with wearables in 2021, but the effort has struggled to secure the funding needed to propel it out of the research phase, said Dr. John Cordell, a human factors engineer with the Navy. There's no program of record, there's no resource sponsor, Cordell said, told Military Times, noting that the Office of Naval Research had sponsored efforts to date. It's an example of a fleet initiative that needs to find a home up in Washington, but has yet to become interesting enough for that to happen. With a carrier strike group now equipped with the tech, researchers hope that the results will grab attention. We're after helping leadership on these ships understanding how the mission is impacting the sleep and recovery of their sailors, especially as they go on these deployments that involve a lot of stress, said Dr. Rachel Markwald, a senior sleep physiologist at the Naval Health Research Center and an implementation lead for the CREW program. I think most people understand that sleep is incredibly important to help restore our performance, our health, our capacity, Markwald added. And if we have no idea where folks are related to their own capacity, then we'll continue to just do what we've been doing, push forward without those insights. While the 2017 collisions created the most significant moment of reckoning for the Navy, they're not the only recent examples of mishaps in the wee hours with indicators that fatigue played a role. Naval Safety Command published a rundown of smaller fatigue-related mishaps in the wake of the collisions, and in a presentation delivered earlier this year, Cordell pointed out that recent mishaps, including the February collision of the carrier USS Harry S. Truman with a Panama-flagged merchant vessel near the Suez Canal, and the May 2024 collision of two landing craft air cushion, or LCAC, vessels off Jacksonville, Florida, took place between the hours of 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. Investigations into both of those incidents have yet to be released. For the current study, participation was entirely voluntary, but came with an incentive. If sellers wear their Aura rings, which tracks 20 different biometric factors and retail for about $200 for at least 75% of the deployment, they get to keep the tech. Sellers who are less consistent won't face a penalty, but will need to give the rings back. The rings were chosen in part because they don't give off a signal or GPS data and are considered passive, Cordell said. They connect to your phone via Bluetooth, but if the phone is not there, it's not a problem, he said. The Chinese can't find a ship because the crew is wearing Aura rings. Still, even beyond securing a resource sponsor, the researchers know they'll face more obstacles on the way to the crew vision of service. Wide implementation of biometric fatigue monitoring underway. One unanswered issue is whether the service will be able to require sailors to wear the devices. Another concern is the infrastructure that will need to be added to ships to create secure local upload points to transfer biometric data to a central location while bypassing the cloud for privacy and safety. But Mark Waltz says she believes the value of the devices will become clear not only to the unit leaders monitoring fatigue, but also the sellers who will get a better sense of their own performance and needs. It's not just, hey, wear this device so we can keep step before fatigue becomes a problem, she said. This is a self-management tool as well, and we want it to really be something that the individual can use and hopefully finds some values in. In our next article, Hegseth orders immediate changes to troops' household goods program, dated May 23, 2025. With peak military moving season in full swing, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has ordered immediate changes to the system that moves troops, household goods, in light of recent deficiencies in the performance of the new global household goods contract, according to the Pentagon memo. That increase includes increasing the reimbursement rate of for troops and families who decide to move all or part of the household goods themselves to 130% of what the government would have paid under the GHC contract for personal procured moves from May 15th through September 30th. The rate is currently 100%. I take my responsibility to our service members, civilians, and their families seriously, XF wrote in a May 20th memo to senior Pentagon leaders, combatant commanders, and defense agencies. The new contract, worth potentially up to $17.9 billion over 9 years, is aimed at fixing longstanding problems with missed pickup and delivery dates, broken and lost items and claims. However, amid the contract's rocky rollout this year, families have reported delays in getting their household goods picked up and delivered. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for now. I'd like to thank you for joining us for the Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.